You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so happy to have you join us. That was the Hot Texas Swing Band opening the show with their original Hot Texas. And whether you are joining us live tonight, or you're going to catch this on the replay podcast off of LA Talk Radio, or Podbean, or Spotify, or wherever you like to go, we thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Hey, who's our guest tonight?
Special guest, Mark L. Redmond.
And there he is.
We're going to be talking about the Box M Gang.
Yes. Hello, Mark. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi. Tell our audience where you're joining us from.
I'm in Apache Junction, Arizona.
Ah.
All right.
So are you having dry heat there right
yes,
now?
Yes, we are. Very dry, very hot.
Very hot. What's your temp today?
Today it's only, I can't believe I'm saying only, but today it's only about 108 or something like that. It's been up to 117 or something.
Oh,
like
my goodness. And here
very little rain.
And very little rain, yeah.
A cooling off trend.
Cooling off trend. Well, yeah. We're delighted to have you with us. Jim's going to go ahead and read a little something about you, Mark, and then we're just going to get started.
Okay.
All right. Mark Redmond taught high school English for 28 years in South Bend, Indiana. He's a member of several writing groups, including Western Writers of America. He has published over 25 short stories and articles, a collection of short stories, a six-book middle grade fiction series, and three Western novels for more mature readers. And the first two books of a brand new series will be featuring tonight, The Box M Gang. Mark and his wife, Susie, currently live in Arizona, where Mark writes full time. Welcome, Mark.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah. Remind us where we met.
Susie and I were in Tombstone in, I believe it was March, at the Tombstone Western Festival of Western Books with Doug Hawking and that whole crew. And we met you and Jim there.
Yes, I remember that well. That was the day before the Tucson Festival of Books. And it was
Was
just authors, authors everywhere. We had a wonderful time.
Yes, it was a lot of fun.
So tell us a little something about yourself, maybe, that Jim didn't read in the bio.
I belong to Single Action Shooting Society for a number of years. I shot with a group in Buchanan, Michigan. I lived in South Bend, Indiana at the time, and I belonged to the River Bend Rangers. My shooting name was JP Drifter,
and
or just plain Drifter, as opposed to Clint Eastwood's High Plains Drifter. But I met a great bunch of guys. I knew one before I started, but the main reason I joined was I wanted to get comfortable handling the kind of weapons I'd be writing about. And I did all of my own reloading and had a good time, honed my shooting skills a little bit, and got to know also some characters that I knew I'd be able to use eventually in my writing. There were some great characters in that group.
We were members. It's funny that you would bring that up, that group up, because we were members for a few years when we lived in California, and we'd never heard of the group before, Single Action Shooting Society. And I was Silver Bell, B-E-L-L-E. And what were you?
White Plains Drifter.
So your mother's from another mother, I guess.
That is wonderful.
That was a great group. Yeah. We really were not competitors, but it was so fun to just be around all of the people and look at their, what everyone was wearing. Authenticity is a really important part of member, being a member there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I still belong, even though I haven't shot for quite a few years now. I still belong because I believe in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I want to support them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a fun group, and you learn a lot of things, and they certainly teach you how to use the weapons that they use. It's a very controlled situation, and you can only do certain things. You load up a certain place, you unload at a certain place. You always get somebody there that's checking to see what's going on, to make sure every single person is following the rules and the guidelines.
Mm-hmm. They're the safest bunch of shooters I've ever been with. Really.
Well, we can certainly see that you have a love for the West, Mark. When did you start writing?
I started writing actually when I was in elementary school. I began writing poetry and little stories here and there. I still have almost everything I've ever written in a file cabinet next to me.
Oh, wow. But,
I didn't really start writing. I think the first, I looked it up to see, the first article I ever had published was in 1990. It was a short article for a ladies' magazine about my wife, who was struggling with a debilitating illness. And I wrote the article about her for a magazine. Then the first book I had published, I started writing in 1988.
And what is it about the West that calls you?
Well, I grew up, I was born in 1953. So I grew up in the days of black and white television. And on Saturday, we didn't watch a lot of television, but on Saturday mornings, it was cowboy time. Hopalong Cassidy and Roy Rogers and Sky King, all those guys. And I mean, like so many boys from that time period, I wanted to be a cowboy. And then that led to later to reading Western books and watching Western movies and so forth. And of course, the farther I went, the more I realized that what Hollywood was telling me wasn't anything like what actually happened, but still, that's what got me started initially.
There sure were a lot of Westerns on in those days.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, the way we have CSI today is, you know,
So many old names, Hoot Gibson, Johnny McMahon. I go back a little farther than you do, so I can
I recognize those names.
Yeah. You and I, Mark, are a little bit more contemporary. He's an old guy.
At least they were talking. They were talking movies when I was watching that.
Yeah, you were a little later than William S. Hart. Yeah. How fun. So who do you like to read now? Is Westerns what you choose to pick up and read now?
I read a wide variety of things. I was an English teacher for 28 years, so I read a lot of Dickens and Poe and Twain and all the classics. But in the meantime, I never lost touch with the West. And I started out as a kid. My older sister read my first Dane Gray book to me when I was still in probably early middle school, upper elementary. And that got me started. And then I Max Evans and of course Dane Gray, eventually Louis L'Amour. All those guys are the ones that I started reading. Now I still read Dane Gray and Louis L'Amour. In fact, I'm in the process of reading a Louis L'Amour book now. But I also have picked up Johnny Boggs and CJ Box and J.A. Chance and some of those. We were talking about Chris Enns a while back. I've read one of her books. There are so many good, solid Western authors out there to choose from. In fact, I told Johnny Boggs my biggest trial when I read one of his books, I read on a kind of a list. And my biggest struggle after I read one of Johnny Boggs's books is not picking up another one of Johnny. I always enjoy him.
He's wonderful. Yeah, I understand that. Now, besides, we're going to be talking in greater detail about the new series, The Box M Gang, book one in this case. But you've written some other series. Would you just very, very touch on some of the other series and books that you've written for us?
I will. I have them here. I started, and because I grew up the way I grew up and then found out that Hollywood was way off, I was disappointed when I learned that all that stuff I thought was real wasn't. It was almost like finding out about Santa Claus, you know? So I wanted kids to know what the old West was really like. So even though I wrote fiction, I made it historically accurate and did a lot of research. So the first series I wrote was the Artie Anderson series, and these were set in post-Civil War Texas. And Artie Goes West was the first book. I wrote this in, I finished it in 1988 and sent it out to a publisher. And of course, I was new to the writing game, so I thought they would send a letter back and say, okay, we got a contract for you. But instead, it was 11 years later before I actually got a contract. This is the second book in the series, Artie and the Hunt for Phantom. Artie is an 11-year-old boy at the beginning of the series, and he and his parents live in Ohio. There's a fire in the store that his parents own, and his father is killed. But he and his mother decide they're going out to Texas to take over this ranch that the father and mother had bought. So they travel by stagecoach out to Texas and wind up taking over the Circle A. Yeah. This is Artie and the Texas Ranger, the third book in the series. The fourth one is Artie's Long Day. And in that one, I had two students had graduated and gotten married, and they had a daughter who was reading those books. And after I wrote the second one, she sent me an email. Her parents said, would you mind if our daughter emailed you? And I said, of course not. So she sent me an email, and she said, Mr. Redmond, I really like your books, but I was wondering if maybe you could give Esther, who's the main girl in the story, a little bigger part in the next one. In Artie's Long Day, he's rescuing a friend from an arroyo when a flash flood comes. He knows a flash flood is on the way. He's trying to pull his friend out, and he gets his friend out but gets caught. Esther rescues him. So the little girl was absolutely delighted with that book. This is fifth one in the series, Artie and the Cattle Rustlers, where some people try to steal their herd. Mm-hmm. And then in the last one, I took Artie on a trail drive from Texas to Dodge City. And he was 15 by then, and he went along with the cowboys from his ranch and a couple other smaller ranches around there, and they made a cattle drive up to Dodge City. So that one was fun. You have the Box M Gang. This is another middle grade series, also for basically 8 to 12 year olds. Mm-hmm. I wrote that in 2020, I believe. And then this one is the sequel to that. It's the Box M Gang and the Army. And as soon as I finish the book I'm working on now, I'll go after number three in that series. I have kids already. Well, not just kids. I have kids basically saying, come on.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. I like that.
That's a great thing.
While I was writing, I was teaching. And parents came up to one of my book signing tables one night and said, hey, our kids love your books, but enough of the kids' books. Write something for us, please. So I started this series, this is Nate Landry. He's the main character. Mm-hmm. He and his best friend, they grew up together. His best friend's a Native American. His name is Wolf. And Wolf goes with him most of the places. When Nate's bounty hunting, Wolf is with him. And they have a really great, they're brothers. In their minds, they're brothers as far as they're concerned. And they have a great relationship. They're constantly picking at each other, just like brothers really do a lot of times. And they're a lot of fun. I want people who read my books to be able to laugh a little while they're reading too. So they do pick on each other a lot. Mm-hmm. This is the second one in the series. It's Bounty Hunter Nate Landry. The first one is Major Issues. The second one is Family Fury. And the third one is Dust Devil. And this one I named Dust Devil because the character that they're chasing, like a Dust Devil, keeps disappearing. They're good at what they do, but they can't catch this person through most of the book. And I don't want to give any spoilers or anything, but they are really working. They're doing everything they can to catch this criminal, and it nothing they're doing. The person's always one step ahead. Then I over the years, I wrote some. While I was waiting to get that first book published, I took a couple of courses from the Children's Institute of Writers, and then another one, the grown-up section of that, their sister institute. And they're very, very good courses. And they recommended, don't just sit there while you're waiting to get your first book published. Write some short stories and build up a portfolio. So I started writing short stories. And six of them are in this book. And I know if you're some of you are probably thinking, wait a minute. You said six, and that says five in big letters on the cover. Well, the premise behind that one, when cowboys rode the trail, traditionally, they only carried five bullets in their gun. The hammer was resting on an empty chamber. When they stopped, if they suspected that they might have to use their gun for some reason, then they thumbed an extra shell into that empty chamber. If they rode that way, it might snag or something, and the gun would go off and either shoot them or their horse. So I wrote the five short stories and then put a sixth one in before I published the book.
That's so smart.
That's a very interesting analogy.
Yeah, Mark, you write we for like everybody. That. Something for everybody. We're going to take a very quick break to just let our audience know where one of the places where they can find many of these books. And so we're going to take a listen to our rendezvous with a writer about the books that we curate on our Out West Shop bookshop.org affiliate page. Yeah. And when we come back, Mark's going to read aloud, aren't you?
I am.
All right. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Mark L. Redmond, and we're talking about the Box M Gang, and I think you volunteered to read a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I did. This story, the Box M Gang, is about, and we'll talk more about that later, I'm sure, it's about five siblings who wind up being orphans, and they can't let anybody find out, because if they do, they'll wind up being taken to an orphanage in Tucson, the closest big town to where they live. They want to stay on their ranch. So they're. It's not hard for the older kids to keep the secret, but they're worried about the 10-year-old boy and the 8-year-old boy, Bart and Billy. So they decide they're going to practice a little bit to try to teach the younger kids how this is going to work in case somebody shows up. And so I'm going to pick up the passage that describes their first practice. They're talking about trying to keep things a secret when somebody comes by. We can decide what to do about that when it happens, can't we? Sarah asked. I reckon not, Thad said. He looked at me. Ruth? I shook my head. We need to have answers ready before someone asks about Pa, I said. We want to be honest, but we can't raise folks' suspicions. I don't understand, Bart said. What do you mean? I pushed my chair away from the table, stood, and held out my hand toward Thad. Let's show them what I'm talking about, I said. Thad pushed away from the table, stood, and walked toward the door. Sarah gave me a confused look. Where's he going? She asked. I have no idea, I said. Thad opened the door and looked at me over his shoulder and grinned. I reckon we ought to make this look real for the young'uns, he said. Stepping outside, he closed the door behind him. Bart and Sarah were grinning and watching the door. Billy wiped his eyes with his sleeve. Is Thad running away? He asked. No, silly Billy, Sarah said. He's pretending to be a stranger. Watch. When Thad knocked on the door, I opened it and let him in. He glanced around the room as if he'd never seen it before, nodded toward the table, then smiled at me. He spoke in a deep voice. Howdy, ma'am, he said. Good morning, sir, I said. I bit my lip to keep from laughing at him. I was hoping I could speak to your husband, ma'am, he said. Thad, I said, I'm only 15 years old. I don't have a husband. Thad squinted at me. I'm a stranger. I don't know how old you are. Some girls marry young. I held up my hands. You're right, I said. I took a deep breath. I'm not married, sir, I said. My sister and brothers and I live here with our pa. I beg your pardon, ma'am, Thad said. He was using his deep voice again. May I speak to your father? Before I could answer, Billy started sobbing. Pa's dead, mister, and we buried him down by the swimming hole. Billy, I said, we can't tell people that Pa's dead. Just listen. I turned to face Thad. Pa's not here right now, I said. Maybe we can help you. Thad looked at the ceiling and took a deep breath. Then he grinned at me. My family and I are traveling to Phoenix, he said, and one of our horses pulled up lame 3 days ago. I was hoping you folks might have a horse I could buy from you. I glanced at Sarah and the boys. They sat wide-eyed and open-mouthed, waiting for my answer. I reckon we have one or two Pa would be willing to sell, I said. Let me show them to you and see what you think. Thad and I turned toward the table. He bowed and I curtsied. We returned to the table and sat. Bart leaned forward, staring at me. You can't sell our horses without asking. He looked around the table. Somebody. The horses are ours, I said. So are the cows, the sheep, and the chickens. Thad and I will decide which animals we can sell and which ones we should keep. What about the bull? Billy asked. We'll keep the bull, Thad said. What about the roosters? Billy asked. We'll keep them too, I said. What about Bart? Billy asked. We'll only sell him if we get really short on food. Billy laughed. Bart started laughing, and then we were all laughing. We laughed for several minutes, and the laughter felt really good.
That's a great scene.
Very good.
Mark, what inspired you to create this series?
Well, I wanted to. I hadn't written anything since the last Artie Anderson book for middle grade readers, and that was in 2005 or six, somewhere around there. And since we had been coming to Arizona as snowbirds for 6 or 7 years, and then we wound up having to move here because I had some physical issues and we had to find some good doctors. And I was working on Nate Landry, and I think I had written the first book in the Nate Landry series. And I wanted to go back and start another middle grade series as well, because the first one was doing quite well. But I told my wife, I don't need Texas anymore. we're in Arizona. I've got history all around me. So I wanted to set the series in Arizona. So I started doing research to find a place where it would work. It had to be away from a city and somewhere out away a little bit if they were going to be able to keep their secret. And so I just made up these kids, put them in a bad situation, and then made them step up and take over.
I know you have a question.
How long did it take you to write the book? How long did you spend on it?
Somewhere between 6 and 8 months. Okay. I don't really keep track of how long it takes. I just start writing, and when I finish telling the story, then I put on my editor's cap and get busy doing other things.
Mm-hmm. Was there, you have a particular inspiration around how you come up with a storyline, or did that kind of just evolve?
Oh, it kind of just happened. I just put these kids together and turned them loose, and I'm sure that somewhere along the line I was thinking about some kids that I knew. When I wrote the Artie Anderson series, when I first created Artie Anderson, he was based on my 11-year-old son, Ben.
Oh, okay.
But as Ben grew up, Artie stayed 11 for a lot longer. So Artie took on his own personality, and that's how these kids were in the Box M Gang. Once I created them, they just came to life and had their own personalities and their own character traits and everything else.
Since this is the second series that you're writing, are there any lessons you learned from the first writing of the first series that you've applied to this series?
That's a really good question. I think probably the best thing I learned when I wrote that series, the Artie Anderson series, I lived in Indiana and I had visited Texas once. So I relied completely on online research. I watched videos of the country, of the countryside, nature videos and PBS and stuff like that. I read volumes of history and watched a lot of documentaries on Texas and that area. Here, I've been able to do more hands-on research, and it works better. I like that a lot better. I'm more comfortable when I'm describing something if I've been there.
Yeah.
How long have you lived in Arizona now?
This was our third year, I believe. Okay. Here we'd been coming out here for 8 or 9 years in our motorhome. We were we worked in a resort in Indiana in the summertime and then came out here and worked in a resort in the wintertime for the first couple years, and then eventually got to where we didn't have to work while we were out here.
How fun. So okay, so now we're talking about the characters of the first book in the series. We see 5 kind of silhouettes here, so we know there are 5 major characters. This is the part of the show that's always fun, because we're going to just throw out a name at you, Mark, and you can say just a little something so we can get through a number of them, or you can say, pass, and we'll throw out another name. So let's start with Ruthie Martin.
In the years that I taught, I met a number of young ladies that are a lot like Ruthie Martin, very independent, very capable, very mature, and willing to step up and handle whatever comes her way. She was easy to create.
And you chose to use first person. We're seeing the story really through Ruthie's eyes. Yeah. Was that a challenge for you as an older gentleman to be writing through the eyes of a 15-year-old girl?
No, not really, because and everything else I've written is first person. Like the whole Artie series was told by a boy. The Nate Landry series is first person and it's told by Nate. But I wanted to do because I have a lot of girls who read my books and a lot of women who read them. So I wanted to change things up, to make it a little different perspective And again, because I've spent so much of my life with teenagers, I know how they think. And it was pretty easy for me to, now when I do the audiobook, it'll be a little harder to remember that Ruth doesn't talk the way I do. You know, I mean, different. But as far as the way she thinks, I've made myself get inside her head and think the way she did.
Mm-hmm. Who do you want to ask about?
You know, these are pretty resourceful kids. You know, they've had a pretty good, in some respects, a pretty good upbringing. In other respects, it's things have been kind of tough. But they all seem to be thinking logical, and they think to be able to take care of themselves to a good degree. You know, our next person we want to talk about is Thad. Now, Thad's the oldest brother, but he's a little bit younger than Ruth.
Yes, Thad is the man of the house, and he knows that. And the relationship that he and Ruth have is more of a partnership instead of who's the boss. And that's why they're able to work so well. Because the two of them get along really, really well, and they realize what the problem is. They realize what they're going to have to do to make things work, and they just made up their minds they're going to do it.
Yeah,
it's a little bit different when you get down to the next sister, because she's a little bit of a spitfire, and right from the beginning, she's not going to have anybody tell her what to do.
And that's Sarah.
Yeah, she doesn't. Sarah doesn't take direction very well, does she?
and Sarah is kind of loosely based on our oldest daughter. I can close my eyes and see our daughter Melody saying, "You're not the boss of me."
there you go.
She was just a lot like that. So that was an easy one for me to do. I just thought about how Melody would have reacted.
How about Billy?
Billy was just fun. I mean, I have known so many little Billies, you know, over the years. And we've had not only gone through kids that were that age, but now we have 12 grandchildren.
Oh, my God.
And the boys have gone. In fact, one of them is Billy's age. And he's I hadn't thought about it until just now, but he and Billy are a lot alike. And that, mm-hmm. and that may have something to do with Billy's character. Although 8-year-old boys are pretty much 8-year-old boys most of the time.
Who do you want to ask about, honey? Who's
poor
next?
Billy. You want Billy to keep his mouth shut, but he spills the beans on everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't think like we do.
Well, we always have to have a little comedy. Billy's kind of our Who do you want to ask about now?
You know, we have a stranger that comes by and helps mm-hmm. him out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Jim.
Yeah.
Jim's one of my favorite characters. Yeah. He's a bounty hunter and a very gentle, kind-hearted person who, when he meets these kids, is impressed with what they're doing and decides that since he's there, he'll do what he can to help them. And he comes along at a very convenient time for them. Now, one of the things that experts in writing children's literature tell you, I learned this in the course I took, and in my early days of children's, writing a lot of children's short stories, you can't have... If you're going to write an effective children's story, you can't have adults solving their problems, but you can have adults working with them and giving them a little guidance. And then the kids are still solving the problems. And that's what I tried to do with Jem. He gives them some pointers, helps them out a little bit, answers some of their questions, and then has to go on around it about his own business, and they carry on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a good role model, and he does things that he kind of tells you and shows you how it's really supposed to be done. And he could have taken a little bit of advantage here or there, the kids, but he doesn't. He's really a true guy. So, mm-hmm.
And his full name is Jeremiah Jackson. What a great name!
he's Jeremiah.
We don't want to do spoiler alerts, really, but there is a very interesting family that appear. Tell us about, is it the Wells, Paul and Kate Wells? Yeah. Is that their name?
Yes. Yeah.
Without yes. giving too much away.
The Wells family, and they're, okay, there always have been, and there always will be people like the Wells family. They are just passing through, but they come on a situation where they find somebody who's vulnerable and they think they can step in. In fact, they do. They step in and take over. And they think, because they have some leverage, they think they're going to be able to just take over the house and the property and everything else and kind of use the kids as servants.
Do you want to ask your favorite question?
Oh, yeah. We talked about this the other night. Mark, any of the characters ever surprise you?
Yes, all the time. They constantly surprise me. In fact, when I started the second book in the series, I wasn't sure. I didn't have a title or anything yet. I wasn't sure about what was where I was going to go with that. But when Bart and Billy first came on the scene in the first chapter, they surprised me. And what they were doing set the stage for everything that happened after that.
Mm-hmm. Has a character ever, appeared to you, knocked on your door, sat on your shoulder or whatever, and you've just said, no, not now. No.
No, that's...
You always just welcome them in.
That is funny that you asked that. I have a good friend who lives here in Arizona who from time to time will write a short piece where her characters come and knock on her door and she answers the door and they come in and sit and visit with her and discuss what they want to do and or tell her what they did that she didn't know about and stuff like that. And I used that in trying to get my toughest audience to date to get people to read my kids' books are my own grandchildren. It's been really hard to get them to read Westerns because they're interested in other stuff, which is fine. But I still try to encourage them to get them to at least try. It's kind of like trying to get a kid to eat broccoli when he doesn't like broccoli, even though he's never tasted it before.
Yeah.
So I wrote them a letter from Billy and sent it.
Oh, how fun.
And they got such a kick out of that. And I'll probably do it again. I may even use it on some people that aren't my grandchildren to do that. Because one granddaughter had started to read the book and stopped. So Billy told her he really missed her and he didn't have any idea what happened to her. So eventually one of my granddaughters, they're twins, the two youngest ones, and one of them finally wound up reading the book. So
how fun.
That worked anyway.
We're going to take
course coming to visit me. No, I don't have that.
We're gonna take another very short break. We are wonderful to have a sponsor come alongside of us. They do a lot of our graphics for us, and we just love them. Blue Cottage Agency. We're going to hear a word from them, and then we'll be back to wrap up. Stay tuned. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with special guest Mark L. Redmond, and particularly about the Box M Gang. And we were just discussing some of those characters in there.
Yeah.
You mentioned about your grandchildren reading the book. Now, has anybody read the book and said, I don't like that character? Well, granted, why did you do that?
No, I haven't had anybody do that. I had an interesting opportunity. The school where I taught for 28 years, one of the elementary teachers, a third grade teacher, got a hold of a copy of the book you are holding. Right. And she read it and liked it. So she read it a chapter a day to her third grade class. Mm-hmm. And then about the time they finished, the second book had come out. So she grabbed that and read that to them as well. And we got to do about a 45-minute Zoom. Those kids asked me so many questions. And some of the questions they asked are the same ones that we've talked about today. But one of them said, would you consider letting Thad tell the story? Or how about Billy? I said, Thad, Billy, I don't think so.
Not yet. Maybe later in the series, right? You have a wonderful way of keeping in touch with your readers. And we signed up for it. We look forward to your newsletter every Friday. Tell us a little bit about how readers can also stay in touch with you and what you've got going on.
Well, I do have a newsletter going on my website, markelroydman.com. You can sign up for my newsletter that goes out every Friday. And I try to keep people entertained and informed. I try to put in a good word for other authors whenever I can. And keep people up with where I am in my writing progress and where we're going to be next and so forth. I'm also on Facebook, and I try to stay very active on Facebook, a little bit on Instagram. I'm still trying to learn how to function on Instagram. And then just recently, within the last month or so, I signed up for TikTok.
You did.
My grandkids talked me into it. So I've started posting on TikTok and so far gotten some pretty good results. We've posted videos from our book signings and stuff like that and had fun with that.
That's great. I know at the Western Writers of America conference, I saw a trailer. You had a lovely trailer. Is that one of your grandkids? Who put that trailer together for you?
My oldest grandson made that one for me.
Yeah, it's really good. I stopped a couple times like, oh, that's Mark Redman. Oh, we're going to have him on.
You did a good job.
Yeah, I did a really good job.
Was good.
You're very successful doing book signings at Barnes & Noble. Do you have any tips for authors who maybe haven't ventured into, getting out to the public? Any good, one good tip?
Yes, that's a good question. I just had a young writer, a Western writer, who's published his first book. After my last post, he asked me how I got into the store. And you have to be persistent in emailing we started by going and meeting the manager at each store. We're in five different stores in our area. So we started by meeting the manager. Then we established email contact. And then I keep in contact with them, and we're starting our second round of book signings now in Barnes & Noble stores. We've made friends with the managers. We treat them right. We show up. We show up on time. We're very professional about what we do. If you're going to do book signings, and always, this has always been our policy, and we've been doing book signings for, oh my goodness, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Whenever we do a book signing, we go in with absolutely no expectations. Mm-hmm. Then if we do well, we're pleased. If we don't, we weren't expecting to do anything as far as sales. We wanted to make contacts.
Right.
And that's how you're networking with people that way.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking at time, and we are starting. The clock is rolling along. We might have time for another question or two, but before that, I want to be sure that our audience can find you, Mark. So what's the web address and your Facebook address and such?
Okay. I'm at markelroydman.com. I'm also my books are available on, of course, on Amazon, although that I would put that at the bottom of the list. I'm on BarnesandNoble.com, Walmart.com, Kobo.com, almost anywhere you can find good books, and yeah, all the books are on my books site. The R.D. Anderson series isn't. It's traditionally published by a small publisher in Tennessee, and they don't list things the way other people do.
So
all of my Arizona books are listed everywhere, but the R.D. books you can basically get from my website.
Yeah. Looking at time.
We got a bunch of questions here, but we can only ask a couple of them.
So that's why
we're talking. You know, we ask this way every once in a while, Mark. You ever get writer's block?
Never.
Never had it. Let's see, Jim, you have a couple quotes.
Couple quotes.
Yeah.
Oh, quotes.
Mark, this time is just flowing. Hope you're having a good time.
It's been so much fun.
You know, we always like to do at least one quote from the book. And this is from our heroine, Ruthie. She's sharing her thoughts early on. I couldn't remember a time when our family had possessed an abundance of anything, but we had always seemed to have enough of the things that are necessary. I reckon that there were two reasons for that. One reason was that Paul was careful with what little money he had. The other reason was that Paul worked harder than anyone else I'd ever known. Both of those reasons stopped being a part of Paul the day we buried Maul. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the start for the whole story. And now I got from the outside on teamwork from a famous football coach, Vince Lombardi. Individual commitment to a group effort. That is what makes a team work, a company work, a society work, a civilization work.
And the Martin family.
Yeah. And one more from a famous teacher, Reader Pearson. Every child deserves a champion. An adult who will never give up on them, who understands the power of connection and insists that they become the best that they could possibly be.
Wow. Well, Mark, this has been so much fun. We really thank you for being with us. We thank all of our listeners and watchers for being along with us. We thank the Hot Texas Swing Band for the opening closing music. We thank Sam Hassan of LA Talk Radio for making this all work, and Blue Cottage Agency for writing alongside with us. Our guest next week is an author that you mentioned, Mark Locke, not long ago. Chris Entz will be with us, and we will be talking about her newest publication, The Doctor Was a Woman, Stories of the First Female Physicians on the Frontier. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the new book coming out on Bill Tillman. That's also part of our schedule for next week. And Jim, do you have any closing thoughts?
As always, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing and we'll keep reading. We'll see you down the trail.
Thank you, Mark.